Welcome back, one and all, to Coffee and Uche Okeke. This is where we dive deeper into Uche Okeke, the man, the walk, and the legacy. I am Salma Uche Okeke. My co-host is Tamsin Lovell. Hello, Tamsin.
Hello, Salma. How are you?
Fine, thank you. In the art world, we have so many facets of inspiration and areas of creation. We are inspired by many things, and most of all, we are motivated by who we have in our lives. As you may know, dear listener, my father was in contact with many, many people. Personal connection was very important to his process and teaching. Today's guest is one who had a very special relationship with the man, the artist, the educator. Maureen Wan is a member of our family, but her prominent connection with my father was one of mentorship. Her upbringing and journey began in the UK, brought her to Nigeria, and took her back to the UK. Maureen's interest in the influence of social presence on thoughts, feelings, and behaviors has shaped her extensive career in communication, organizational development, lobbying, policy, and talent management. Her 13-year career also reflects her passion for modern and contemporary African art, where she finds parallels between her profession, expertise, and the presence of the artist in their work. Maureen's leadership roles include serving as chair of the board of trustees for a charity and as chair of governors in education with experience across various organizations, including the health sector, where she has co-authored multiple papers on the prevention of sickle cell disease. From her perspective, it doesn't seem to be a stretch from fine art because the artist's expertise is reflected in their work. Hello and welcome, Maureen.
Hello, Salma. Hello, Tasman.
Hi, Maureen. It's so lovely to have you here with us today, and thank you for joining us. Could you share with our listeners a bit about your journey and how your experiences in communication and policy and learning and development have shaped your understanding of the importance of mentorship and sharing experiences?
It was by pure chance that I've actually ended up in a place where one of my primary roles is to manage mentoring and coaching within the organization that I currently work with, because just as Salma described, mentoring has shaped me. And indeed, it really does shape all of us. Often we kind of see mentorship as the formalized mentorship where people have consistent and perhaps structured sit down with particular individuals that are more experienced and knowledgeable than themselves. But actually, in reality, mentorship is about that conversation. It's about just being able to talk to someone and to actually have them listen to you and to hear what they have to say, and then to take that to guide your career or your plans or wherever that advice touches the most. My early mentorship from Uche Okeke has actually shaped and continue to shape not only my professional life, but also my interest. And it really has been of primary importance to me, because when you meet someone like Uche Okeke with a really strong standing in the art world globally, their truth about you can become your truth about yourself. And so it's in that that I've walked not only in my interest in the arts, but also in my professional life in those areas that you've mentioned.
Really interesting, this effect of mentorship and mentoring. And I think it probably goes both ways, both for the mentee and the mentor. So Maureen, could you take our listeners back to when you were growing up? What were your personal interactions with Uche Okeke?
My earliest memory really was when I was not quite a teenager yet, but when we returned to Nigeria in the 70s, we used to go on holiday. We holidayed at each other's family homes, and we would go, myself and my siblings, would go to Nsukka, which is where he was at the time. And we would visit, and we would sit around tables and have lunch together and have conversations. And I distinctly remember that there was quite a lot of art around the house. Even some of the stuff that I saw then, using my almost expert eye, I can begin to kind of interpret them a bit more. But we would sit around the table, we would have lunch together. And art was part of what we did on holiday. We would draw, we would write stories. And when he did come around, when he was back from work, and sometimes he was part of that, he would read the stories and find them interesting. And I'm absolutely no good at drawing, but he would see something in the things that we wrote and in the things that we had drawn or things that we made. So there was something of that. And just being able to kind of see something in something that is not quite something that he had, which was very much inspiring, because there was something about his position and where he was and his interest in art and his professional practice. But to still be able to see that there is something emerging was very promising. So that was my earliest kind of recollection of that mentoring.
Would you say that mentoring was encouraging in the sense that you could just be yourself? You didn't have to be self-conscious about whatever you were putting out because nobody was judging?
I think if I were to kind of, looking back reflectively, if I were to articulate what that was, it was just kind of an encouragement of creativity. So it was that ability to kind of see something in everything. So allowing that creativity to emerge without you being able to describe it in the way the norm would describe what is good and what is perfect and what is excellent, just that emergence of something and allowing for things to unfold, both being a child, but because he himself had a strong connection and did quite a lot of art in its abstract form. So that levels of abstraction were already something he was comfortable with and was able to encourage people to be comfortable with that. So that's how I kind of saw it.
Your mother had a big connection with Uche Okeke. What was the relationship like between them? And can you share a little bit about what stood out to you as formative about that relationship?
It was incredible because my mother and Uche Okeke were very, very alike. My mother was Uche Okeke's younger sister. They did have a resemblance, but also they were both very creative. Also, my mother had a radical propensity for just being able to be different, to think differently. She loved anything that had any semblance of art and beauty, and she kind of allowed that to help her. So I think there was something about the way that they were both alike that was also an inspiration for me. My mother worked in television. She was a journalist, but her main role was actually a film editor. She too was very inspiring in her creativity around film. So the way she would actually put TV programs or news programs together, well, the film that was shot around an individual or a scene, that form of creativity, that form of allowing herself to take her ability to absolutely direct that process in the way she sees it fit to be, and to confidently stand in the midst of what effectively was a male-dominated environment and stand for her truth when challenged. I find that there was something about that that was actually quite similar to Uche Okeke. They were very close. They talked a lot. They laughed a lot. And they had such a great relationship.
There was something that myself and Ijeoma always remembered about your mom. That love for beauty in her face, everything will be nicely arranged. And I think myself and Ijeoma took that from her. She loved to have beautiful things around her. She had that eye to know what to put where and to create that composition in her environment, a bit like interior decoration.
My mom was very much a maximalist. So she had beautiful things. She liked to have them on display. And one of the key things that actually often fascinated me is that she would move things around. Like when we go to friends' houses, they would have the same setup in their living room year on year. My mother would gather us together, move things around. If she was of our generation, she probably would have excellent curatorial skills because of her ability to place and position things in relation to each other. I think there was something about that which was very similar to what Uchokeke would do, that ability to move things around and position things and see beauty in all things.
The most interesting thing about that romance, so to speak, with the environment is that myself and Ijoma picked it as if it's genetic. As far back as I can remember, one of the things that connected myself and Ijoma was how we love to keep changing our space. We always share the bedroom and we always wanted to move. And our mother doesn't have that at all. We always wanted to change this, move this here. It was very critical to us for some reason. And that was one of our greatest connections. Around when my dad fell sick, that he was hospitalized in Awka first, I had gone to visit your mom's apartment in Awka. She was in the UK. She had that her apartment in Nigeria that she would come to from time to time. And it was her bedroom. It was like just looking at myself. I remembered everything just there. This looking pretty. This many years afterwards, I've had to be around people that didn't care about those kinds of things. Always the presentation was key. And I didn't know that not having that kind of beauty around me could be very heartening, very negative to my natural vibes. I took great note of your mom and how she just loved to organize the space and make it look nice and change the look each time and display things, and presentation was very key.
Yes, and you must remember that our grandmother, if you go to her house, there was patterning of Uli, which was quite significant in the way she put patterns on the wall. It's not eye level, but she put a motif across all the borders at the top of where she spent most of her time. But I think hopefully we got some of it. I mean, but up until when my mother died, I actually considered myself a minimalist, so I would only have only pieces of stuff on display. And then when my mother passed away, I seemed to become a maximalist and put more beautiful things around me.
Yeah, I am still a minimalist myself, because when you have less things, you're able to present what you want to you. You're able to, yeah, we don't like clutter, naturally.
Yeah, no, I don't like clutter.
She sounds so wonderful, and I loved that description of her that you said she had this radical propensity to think differently. She sounds so amazing. And what an environment to grow up in. I think it's rare, and it sounds so unrestrictive. And I'm imagining your mom and Uchokeke having these amazing conversations, and you including your kids, but also just being constantly exposed to those kind of conversations. So that it seems to be a bit of a central theme, that conversation, collaboration between your work and Uchokeke's mentoring philosophy. Could you chat a little bit about how sort of fostering dialogue and exchange of ideas contributes to creating a vibrant learning culture, both in artistic communities, but also in our corporate settings where you also work?
For me, collaboration and conversation are actually central to the way we evolve as human beings. We don't get to know what other people know unless we're willing to kind of collaborate and have conversations with them. And I think innovation doesn't exist all in itself. It comes as a result of people's willingness to collaborate, to exchange ideas, to have these conversations. Having an openness to learning and creating cultures of learning wherever you go, which is often seen in the very basic things like the exchange of ideas, the sharing what you learnt elsewhere, that kind of ability to put oneself out there and what they know out there builds a culture where others are encouraged to do the same. Within artistic communities, I think collaboration and these conversations are really central to the evolution of art. I'll give you an example. I think a month or so ago, there was an exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery in London, and this exhibition was co-sponsored by the Picasso Foundation. It was an exhibition on portraiture. It was very focused on global sort of Africa portraiture. And there was a piece in there by an artist that painted quite a lot of the duality, again, effectively continuing the conversation that Picasso started in the 1930s and painted lots of images with duality that's reflective of the work of Picasso. Picasso Foundation co-sponsored that exhibition. So it's, again, that idea of collaborating and never stopping that and continuing the conversation and acknowledging that people are still learning from the artist and doing and supporting that. You see that in the arts. We talk about innovation as a fusing of ideas, and that comes about through these collaborations and conversations. In my professional life, I actively engineer those collaborations and those conversations. I think it's quite important, and I think we need to do more of that around art, and especially modern and contemporary African art.
I agree with you. I love that.
I think we're beginning to see a lot more of that emerging as museums are putting up kind of very modern African arts. We're beginning to see that conversation that art across the centuries having with each other. We're beginning to see that as an emergent field where people from different parts of the world are learning from artists across the globe. And we are beginning to feel that museums are showing those relationships as well, just opening up the conversation. I think it was in 2022 when I was in Germany. I traveled to Munich. There's a gallery, I think it's Bauhaus Gallery, that did an exhibition that they called A Collective. They were able to showcase different things that were happening in different areas of the world that were very similar to the movements in Europe, in South America, and there was something about the Dinsuka School as well. So conversation is increasing, and I see it play itself out in the art world as well.
Isn't that the importance of looking at a lot of art as well?
When I started my journey in art, it was interest, but I'm finding as my journey evolves into a professional practice, I see that when I see a piece of art, I can see where I've seen something similar, whether it's something in South America, Australian art, or modern European art. You can begin to see that seeing a lot of it does help.
Maureen, you've developed quite an expansive expertise in art over 30 years. So you speak about having an interest, but you've actively developed that interest into an expertise. And I think a lot of people would be interested to hear how you started that and then what happened to sort of solidify your relationship with art as the years went on.
I actually thought it was an interest initially. I can't tell you where I segued into a sort of professional practice. I'd been interested in art from a very early age. It's kind of those conversations around me were quite a lot about art, both with my mother as well as with the conversations I had with Ucho Keke. And in fact, my dad also has an incredible interest in art. And apparently my mother and my father met through one of Ucho Keke's first kind of creative spaces in northern Nigeria. That's where my dad used to be a volunteer there for a few hours a week and would help with some of the write-ups and do some of the sub-editing of stuff. Anyway, I think that's how my parents met. So art has always been an interest in our family. The seminal point was in actually the first kind of exhibition around African art was held in the October Gallery, and this was many years ago now. It was called Africa 95. I spent quite a lot of time with African artists that had put works in the gallery, and there were lots of different events all over England. Prior to that, I'd been around Ucho Keke and Arts of Nsukka School. There was in the Aceler Institute in the 80s, I was fairly young, but there was a UNESCO conference with artists from all over the world and academics, and there was a lot of art in display, and I took an interest there. But also, that stayed with me. In 1995, there was this October night. It was called Africa 95. I spent quite a lot of time with Ucho. We had quite a lot of time together, lots of conversation around art. Towards the end of that time together, he said to me, perhaps you should consider setting up and running a gallery specializing in African and contemporary art. I really did not see myself as being competent, capable, or even confident enough, yes. But from the interactions we'd had, the conversations we had, the questions I'd asked, and perhaps he saw something which I did not see in myself. I felt flattered almost, but I didn't really think of that. But that spurred me on to become not so much as an observer, but somebody who asks quite a lot of questions around art, and somebody who almost views it one step removed in a professional sense, somebody who viewed it not just for, but the meaning, the message, the connectivity, all of those things that make for a good art appraiser. So that's really where my professional interest starts. And I'd followed that interest that I think that spurred on my seeing quite a lot of art, going to galleries, going to museums, spending my time traveling and doing lots of things and lectures and all of that sort of stuff. So that's where my interest started. So almost 30 years ago. And I followed that on consistently and learnt along the way. Now, when it comes to kind of appraising art, people started coming to me to tell them what I think about stuff they wanted to buy. I thought I ought to be a bit careful here. And so I started doing research into things that people wanted to buy and volunteering my opinion. So that's kind of how I segued into maybe more of a professional practice.
Wow. Over 30 years of involvement in the arts and with consistency, with a whole lot of deliberate effort on your own side in the sense of traveling to those museums across the world just to see what's happening there. Definitely something gives. And I know that you've always been somebody that asks questions. From the time you started asking questions, you are definitely going deeper and deeper and deeper into it. Do you mind telling us more about your aspirations to take your career in art further?
I want to support collectors. I want to support museums. I want to support galleries. I want to do a little bit more work around early talent in art, emerging talent in art. I'd love to see more stuff from Africa. And one of the things that is very encouraging is that you're beginning to see contemporary African artists now in bigger galleries and museums. So I'd like to be involved in more of that work. But also, I do have an interest in maybe doing more of what's called Tropical Modernism, which is an exhibition held at the V&A Museum, the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. There was showcasing tropical architecture. There was focus in Ghana and two British architects that worked around there just before independence, in Ghana. And there was also some stuff around tropical architecture in Pakistan and in India. It suddenly occurred to me that there isn't really that sort of rounded view of what the journey of architecture in a way that kind of is very reflective of the beginning of tropical architecture, the mud huts and those buildings that house people being equally as valid from the off as to the beautiful architecture that we see in South Africa and other parts of Africa. So I'd like to be part of actually getting to tell those stories.
So we talk a lot about legacy as it relates to Uche Okeke. The dictionary defines legacy as the long-lasting impact of particular events, actions, etc. that took place in the past or of a person's life. What personal legacy exists within your mind about Uche Okeke and what he leaves behind?
It's that ability to encourage people to find their space. I think it's his ability to see something that others don't see in themselves and to encourage that to thrive in whatever form best suits them or works for them. I think you could see that in his early work in Uli, which didn't really have much of a presence before he took an interest in it. You could see how he took something that was really very much on the fringes of how design and writing and language is used and interpreted and brought it to the fore in his practice. What he did leave behind is that ability for people to look at his work and look at his life and look at both his educational practices and his love for the arts and use that as a way of reimagining what they see beauty to be, what they see their own legacy to be, how he knew as an individual that he wanted to chart his own course, that was individual to him, that sense that in doing that, he's encouraging everybody to actually find their space, find their truth, and to see that as something that can ultimately lead to their own legacy too. So I think that's, for me, that's what he's left behind.
He certainly did seem to me as well to be an artist that was so much more than the sum of his artworks. Because of who he was as a person and the sort of impact of his philosophy that went around the work and his interactions with other people as well. But if we think about the works, what's your favorite of his works and why?
Yeah, I think as paintings go, when I was growing up and I spent time with my grandmother, there was a painting of my grandfather that hung in my grandmother's living space, a place where she sat most of the time. Her life was fairly routine. She would wake up in the morning and she would get up and she had a space by a window where she sat and she could observe people coming into the gate and people in her front garden. She spent quite a lot of time in that space. And there was a painting of my grandfather looking very, very dignified and almost like a nobleman that my uncle had painted. That dignified man that looked, by the virtue of what Uchokeke had preserved in that painting, he looked down on me from when I was young up until I was a teenager. His presence remained there, even though he had died many, many years prior.
He died pretty early because Uchokeke himself was just 10 years old when his father died. That picture, that particular painting, kept him in our view.
That was quite an important piece for us as a family. There were lots of conversations that were had in that space, but he was always in view. I remember when my grandfather died and we were spending some time, my dad's dad died. I remember having that conversation in that room. And I always remember he was always sitting there. When they would all eat together, they ate in that space and that painting was always there. I would say, as paintings go, that would be the one. I think Uchokeke did an incredible job actually painting him into our lives. So that was, and still remains, one of the most significant art pieces because of the sentimental value.
So we've talked about legacies at length. I'm really quite intrigued and impressed by how deep you've got into this, Maureen. Have you started thinking about your own legacy? What would you want your legacy to be?
I think along the way, I've sort of picked up a few bits around that I would quite happily, if that's considered my legacy. So I have three children. I've done quite a lot of work in sickle cell, which I did with my sister, who unfortunately is late. My work in social learning and some of the stuff that I've done around there. And I think going forward, some of the conversations that I've engineered in the art spaces, some of the questions that I've asked that have made curators think differently and added to the conversation, knowingly or unknowingly. I think the work that I would do around art, that is going to be a significant part of my legacy. As long as I continue to have the conversations with people like yourself and like some of the stuff we're now doing, I definitely leave something behind. I think we all inadvertently leave a legacy anyway. There may be something of a more structured approach to thinking about what should I leave behind that might maybe in my thoughts and hopefully in my writing and maybe in my collection and my support of artists, they would be. If a superstar emerged, I definitely would love that to be my legacy, yes. So intentionality would be something that I have to kind of engineer into my building.
Is it still quite legitimate to continue another person's legacy? It's all a collaboration. We can also partake in sustaining it, in perpetuating it, in perpetrating it, in taking it to the next level. That is also quite legitimate. But whichever way you need to go, I have learned, you know, from my father that you need to be deliberate about it. At some point, you need to, and the earlier the better, you need to start thinking. But it's all also a process. It's also like you're evolving. You're also changing along with time. It's not everybody that has such a clear vision from the beginning like Uchokeke did.
Maureen, I wanted to ask you, you spoke earlier about how you actively engineer conversations. And I think that's such a lovely idea because many of our listeners are from the art world, whether they're artists or gallerists or curators. The value in being able to actively engineer exciting and kind of challenging conversations between different people, different parties is very, very valuable. So could you give our listeners perhaps some tips? How would they do that? What could they actually do to actively engineer an interesting conversation?
I think this is important. I do quite a lot of art events in and around Europe, even in the presence of African art in museums or exhibitions. Often there's an absence of a historical perspective, or the connections are not fully formed. I'll give you a couple of examples. So when there was a fashion exhibition in the V&A, it was around black fashion. And I happened to have a sort of go to an event with a conversation with the curator. And I noticed not everybody's going to be able to be in these spaces. There was lots of different fashion and some display of fabric. But, for example, shibori was missing, which is that kind of a tie and dye technique that's from northern Nigeria. The fabric is dipped in wells that are family owned and the design is generated. We know that that existed in the 16th century. People believe it predates a lot of the kind of fabrics that have come out of Africa since, but it was missing in the exhibition. That curatorial talk, I was able to ask a question of why they don't have that. That exhibition later toured and it went to New York and it's moving around a little bit, but the curator was able to say, okay, actually that's missing. Maybe when it tours, I'm going to make sure I put something to do with that fabric in the pieces that are going to different museums for them to consider. Asking those kind of questions around the absences can, when we looked at the tropical modernism that I went to last week, one of the curators did a talk. I was able to say to the curator why we've referenced the two early British architects that worked on some of these projects in Ghana. They're looking at the buildings, you could see a strong Le Corbusier influence. Why wasn't Le Corbusier called out? I know he's controversial. So these are some of the questions. Why weren't some of the kind of modern African architects, why weren't their work at least mentioned or showcased? By asking why some things are absent in stuff on display in museums actually begins to kind of make the curators think, perhaps maybe I should become a little bit more intentional about showing some of the pieces and showing some of the stuff. Art in museums serves the public, being as they're always looking to gauge the public appetite and interest. Curators are open and will consider some of those as the start of conversation for maybe when the exhibition moves on. Really interesting conversations are taking place right now, energizing conversations. For example, last week I was at the V&A. I attended a program called Think Africa, Think V&A. And this was really about understanding the V&A collection. Usually when people came, it's got incredible footfall. People would ask about the Africa collection in the V&A and people would say, well, we don't actually collect Africa in the V&A because they didn't really have much of Africa on display. Then recently they decided to have a look and go through their catalogues and they discovered that they've got over 4,000 pieces, Africa pieces, at the V&A. And that they had quite a number of stuff that was part of this kind of controversial past. And so they did some work maybe a month or so ago, not quite, that's very recently. They had some Ashanti gold pieces that were taken from the Ashantiheen Palace. They had returned it to Africa with the support of the guy who looks after their metalwork collection at the museum. The British troops took it in 1874, actually. And they described it as a loot. They didn't say it was stolen. They said it was looted because it was. And they returned it to a museum in Kumasi. The senior curator for metalworks, a guy called Angus Patterson, was part of returning it and actually helping the local museum to be able to display it and to look after it. Angus, absolutely passionate about returning some of these pieces back to Africa. But it's very complex because a lot of the museums are willing to have this conversation. But there's an Act of Parliament that prevents any of these things being returned, especially for the works held in England. They can't just, out of their own goodwill, return these things. We need to change the law so that the things can be returned. The British government actually does not allow for them by law to be returned, even though they were looted. So there's a lot of stuff around the politics of how they ended up here. They can be returned on loan. For example, what went back to Ghana went back on a 3-year loan. Museums appear to be willing. We just need to change the heart of government to make it possible.
There's also the conversations around the evolving contemporary art, which is also very, very key. Linking it up to its past and showing the influences around the world, that is very important to us also.
Yeah, I think that the value adds is there. When I initially had an interest in African art and I started conversations with various artists around African art, there was still a connection with primitivism. I think that was how it was described earlier, that was still lingering up until maybe recently, where African artists may not have felt that comfortable with being linked to that kind of idea of what the art of Africa is. But if you look, for example, the way things are evolving, contemporary art is now ending up in really strong museums. So there is great promise. Museums are thinking very differently and are opening up a world view where art is being shown more in the rounds. When I was in Australia earlier on in the year, I think it was the Museum of New South Wales, they put a Rothko in the same room where they put some Shoni Barrett work, all of them kind of occupying the same space. In that form, there is a conversation around the validity of both in the same space. And I think this conversation is ongoing. It's how do we become part of the conversation? Like European art of old, how does Africa still tell its story, hold out its authenticity, but be able to show the connectivity across our past, across what's happening in the rest of the world and its art form, but still continue to create something that doesn't necessarily have to be unique to Africa, but can tell Africa's story credibly.
That is Ochakika's vision of natural synthesis, that conversation. But of course, the landscape continues to change and what's important continues to evolve. And the conversation is ongoing. As a matter of fact, from my point, is practically endless because it's a continuous evolution. And that is what he understood perfectly, that nothing was cast in stone. But then there was great importance in researching into the past, and there was great importance in picking up new skills around the world to add to what you have. And that is why people have described him as a father of African modern art. And that is a story that we continue to evolve through his legacy.
No, totally agree. I think he's,
Maureen, I love that what you just described. Effectively, that's another trend that's happening, this unpacking of storerooms from museums. It's usually about 3-5% of a museum's collection that's on display at any one time. You spoke about it being there. These collections do belong to the public, but we never get to see them. We see only a very small fraction of what's there. And it reminds me of what you described earlier about your mother and how she moved things around all the time, unpacked, packed away to change her own space. And it's lovely that museums are starting to do that as well, because we think often of museums as very stagnant, boring, staid, old, stuffy places. And I think there's a regeneration happening through conversations about conversations between what's on display and what's in the storeroom, even if some of what's in the storeroom is controversial. They are unpacking it, they are bringing it out, and they are starting to look at what they've got stored away and stuck away and bringing it out, which recontextualizes it, brings brand new conversations into the air. And I love that trend that's happening, and you must be seeing a lot more of it being based in Europe.
It's very promising and it's very refreshing. One of the key things here is that they're not only having an airing, for want for a better word, but museums are actually creating conversations around particular artwork and reframe. It used to be Art of Africa and its Diaspora, but now it's called Global Africa is the term the V&A has used. And they are positioning that as around the people, and around the continent, but very loosely. So this is Global Africa, is everything out of Africa and its diaspora. And I've noticed this trend where there's now a huge amount of display at the National Portrait Museum. You have a display of art from African artists, American artists, artists from the Caribbean, all positioned together. It's that kind of way of imagining art and engineering the conversation is actually enriching the art space, both for Africans in Africa, but also Africans in diaspora, people with connection to Africa, that the conversation has broadened. So it's no longer siloed, so to speak. Everything is connected. Everything can be placed alongside each other. There was an art piece, which this guy was a significant man in Jamaica in the 1850s. There's a portrait of him in a library. And lots of people have taken an interest in this. And there are people who are sociologists, people interested in anthropology, social history, history, art, design, all of them coming together and to have conversation about this. This kind of moving things around is also creating broader conversation around social issues, which art actually is really more about being able to tell the story and engineer these conversations. So it's happening and it's very exciting.
That's the real beauty of all this, because being someone that as a child witnessed some of the flurry of activities, and I look back and I can see it has continued to evolve. It has been a lot of work bringing us to this point. It is gathering a lot more moss and more people are coming on board. Could it be the advent of the internet and the globalization that has also helped a little bit more? It is definitely a journey that has been continuous, because I watched my father and his contemporaries. They took it out. They went like real ambassadors, activating these conversations all over. And conversation, it can be visual or it can be a discussion, or it could be a workshop. It could be just about anything, but it's putting it out there. The same way globally, the focus has kept changing in terms of African art. I'm happy now you also took note of the trends, and you can see now how Black-related kinds of art is now being juxtapositioned against each other to further show the connections. And this is happening not only in the visual arts, it's happening in all the creatives in one way or the other. It's a continuous development. One thing I know for sure is anything that has been done with a good foundation, anything that people have continued to do, there more could be done, but it is sure to move forward. And that is what we're finding now. It's a conversation that has been ongoing that continues to grow. And it's quite interesting, all the different aspects, all the ramifications, all the new areas it's touching. That is also why we're here, the legacy, to make sure that we also continue to impact globally in that conversation, continue to mentor and build up artists in line with the vision.
I find it exciting that we're thinking more. I did an appraisal for somebody who wanted to buy some American art. And this particular artist drew in some Ankara and Dire motifs in some of their paintings. They are kind of reflective of this emergent kind of global Africa thought, where even Africans in diaspora are picking up on some of the design motifs, the fabric design, and painting those things into their art. It's become more of a cultural movement that is telling stories of connectivity, and it's how we jump on board that and how we articulate it and how we help especially contemporary artists to retain the momentum and give them the sort of airing that gives credit for them being at the forefront of the conversation. I think that's a challenge to all of us in the art space.
There's a lot of work ahead, and that's the beauty of it all. It's quite interesting days ahead.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for giving us your time today, Maureen, out of your busy schedule. We hope the exchange has been as valuable for you as it was for us. We are very grateful to have you with us today, and we look forward to the insight about art you share. We hope there'll be more of that in the future. Thank you to you, Tamsin, my co-host as well. Dear listener, we hope you found it enriching and gained a deeper appreciation for Uchepeke, the man, and his legacy. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Coffee and Uchepeke. For more information and resources on Uchepeke, please visit uchepekelegacy.com.